Burst Time with Damian Lewis.
He wears a suit and nice tie, takes breakfast with his nice wife, puts her hat on to go to work, says goodbye to the poochie first, turns around and blows a kiss, says he loves her and he'll be home by six. His people bring him coffees, they love him in the office, he's the water cooler number one, a man of wit, a man of charm, his secretary's in love with him, she dreams all night of making love to him. He'll buy you a drink and he'll buy him all night high. He don't spill a drop when he falls off his stool. He'll jump on a plane and he'll head for the fight. In love him, you'll miss him, you'll feel like a fool.
Hello, I'm Matt Everett, and welcome to another episode of The First Time on BBC Six Music and BBC Sound. This is the show where you meet some of the most influential and best-loved musicians, authors, actors and artists around, and take a look at the first pivotal musical moments that made them who they are today. And you just heard a track by our guest in this episode. That was Never Judge a Man by His Umbrella. Now, you'll almost definitely be aware of our guest work as an actor. He's an Emmy and Golden Globe winner who's had roles in Band of Brothers, Homeland, Wolf Hall and Billions. But before he was on stage as an actor, he was a musician, and that is where he is right now, kind of returning to his first creative passion. His first ever album, Mission Creep, is out now, and this year he's been taken to the stage for gigs and festival appearances with considerable acclaim. So I'm very happy to welcome to The First Time, Damian Lewis. So we'll be talking about Damian's formative musical influences, his first gigs and the first albums that made an impact on him, some terrible early band names, and how his pursuit of a musical career was somewhat derailed by the whole being an actor thing. We'll also discuss the differences and similarities between communicating and creating as a musician versus being an actor, and how Damian felt making his first album, and we'll play some of his favourite music from David Bowie, JJ Cale and Elvis. But I started by asking Damian, as I do with all my guests, when was the very first time he was aware of music?
It's a big question right out of the box. Mm. Well, it would be through my dad. We always had music on in the house. Dad loved opera. There was always opera on. And he loved a bit of Frank. He loved Ella. And there was always music on in the evenings. I always say to Dad, what happened to the Beatles and the Stones, Dad? You're just...
Quite trad.
But also, he's quite old. You know, Dad's... Hello, Dad. You know, he's 92. So he was born in 30, pre-war baby. Sorry, we're already off music. But he, you know, he was evacuated to Canada as a nine-year-old, spent 3 years away from his parents in the middle of the war. So by 1960, he was already 30. So just as the Beatles came along and, you know, all his influences, his teenage and influences in his 20s, were crooners from the 40s and the 50s.
And 30 was old in the 60s.
Yeah, so I think he probably already thought the Beatles as for the 15-year-olds, which obviously was, and the Stones too, and... I think he felt he just missed it a bit. He was just too old for it.
Did he appreciate music? Did he love it? Did that?
He loved music, and he's a beautiful singer himself, and he sang in choirs, hence the classical aspect. He sang in classical choirs. He's got a lovely tenor voice. And also, you know, he went to live in Chicago for 5 years in the 60s. So when we grew up, whenever one of those old 30s, 40s Cole Porter Gershwin musicals came into town, On Your Toes, Guys and Dolls, 42nd Street, all those old American sort of tap musicals came in. We always went to see them. That was always the sort of first port of call. So, yeah, Dad was sort of a song and dance man that ended up in insurance.
And Ella Fitzgerald is on your list.
particularly singing the Cole Porter songbook. That right. just for me is a very particular thing that I think is the perfect marriage of lyrics, witty, clever, sophisticated lyrics, and an interpreter that you might find hard to beat anywhere at any point in Ella Fitzgerald, I think.
Darling, I know so well I've got you under my skin. I'd sacrifice anything come what might for the sake of having you near, in spite of a warning voice that comes in the night and repeats in my ear. Don't you know, little fool, you can win. Use your mentality, wake up to reality. But each time I do, just the thought of you makes me stop before I begin. 'Cause I've got you under my skin. I'd sacrifice anything come what might for the sake of having you near, in spite of a warning voice that comes in the night and repeats in my ear. Don't you know, little fool, you never can win. Use your mentality, wake up to reality. But each time before I begin, 'cause I've got you under my skin. I've got you under my skin.
Did you sing along with stuff when you were a kid?
Oh, this is such a good question, because something happened to me this morning that made my belly so warm.
Go on.
I was taking my son to school and he started singing a Frank song that I used to sing to him and his sister as a lullaby.
He's
15.
Oh, the heart.
And honestly, my heart melted. And I went, in a really uncool way to a 15-year-old boy, I went, oh, that's a song I used to sing you as a lullaby. It was, you know, if the nightingale should sing like you, they'd sing much sweeter than they do, for you've brought a new kind of love to me. And it's that, and I used to sing that to them. And that is from one of my favourite Frank albums, which is the Songs for Swinging Love. It's
yeah,
that
yeah.
period of time he had with
record.
Nelson Riddle,
mm-hmm.
which was, you know, just had a bit of swing in the thing. And it was, yeah, I liked it.
So what about records that you own, the first record that was yours? Not necessarily bought, because often, like, when you're little, you kind of get gifted a record, or you get, like, you know, it's placed upon you, or a sibling gives it to you. The first record that's kind of, well, this is my one. Now, I can play this when I want, or this CD,
yeah.
I can play it when I want. What was that record for you?
So I've got an elder brother and sister who are 8 and 6 years old.
Oh, so you're basically set. Your music taste, you've got great stuff coming down.
Well, as long as you agree that it's great, that it's great stuff. They had some really cool albums, and then they had, you know, I'm a child of the 80s. They're 6 and 8 years older than me, so they were listening to a lot of 70s music early
yeah.
on. So, sure, it was quite mainstream, but it was good mainstream. It was Bowie and Pink Floyd and Elton John and Billy Joel and Supertramp. You know, it's
big. Is your foundations. This
big
is
70s, yeah. Slightly proggy. You know, there wasn't a lot of punk in there. But I will say, though, that an album I did go out and get, and it's funny that I would even make this sort of align with the punk world at all, but she was post-punk, was Blondie.
Oh, yeah.
And I went out and I bought one of her albums that isn't one of her best-known albums in 1980, called Auto American. Mm-hmm. And it started with this weird... this track called Europa, and it starts in this weird sort of instrumental swirly, whirly way, and you think, well, what is going on here? And then you just get into Blondie, and you get into Live It Up, and you get to Angel on the Balcony, and it was Blondie, you know, even at nine.
Yeah.
I could tell I liked Blondie. First single was Boomtown Rats, I Don't Like Mondays.
You know? Great song.
You know, that was it. You know, you were just sort of getting hold of stuff. You know, I'm just that age. It's a double album of Grease, the movie.
I like that you're being honest. This is good.
Yeah, that was already in the house. Didn't go and buy it. quick, get out of there. And then a K-Tel compilation called Hit Machine, which had What a Fool Believes on it.
Great song.
How cool is that? But also had a bit of Chaz and Dave.
Okay.
You know.
But that's important. You need the spread.
Rabbit. Yep.
So what was your first guitar like? It would have been classical, wouldn't it, I guess?
I did have a classical guitar, but it wasn't very exciting, that guitar. It was just a simple, cheap nylon guitar. But my first fun guitar at the same time, 13, 14, was a Squire. It was a Fender Squire, black. And I regret it to this day, I chucked it, you know, maybe however long ago. Anyway, well into my adult life, I was just playing a lot of acoustic and I just got onto the steel string and strumming. I thought, I'm not going to play the Squire again. And my son now plays electric guitar, as does my daughter. And I've just denied myself one of the great rites of passage was to hand your electric that you had when you were 13 to your son or daughter. And so I regret that massively. So instead, we've got a flying V in the house, which my son pointed at when he was about 14 years old. And I want that one. So I think it's quite cool.
It's a good looking guitar.
I mean, come on.
So did you have that? Because I remember my friends starting on classical. And having that moment of this is not doing what I want. And also having the little footrest. Did you have the footrest? Weird thing where, if you're playing classical guitar in the sort of proper pose, your knee is raised. So you have a small sort of, it looks like a little tiny foldable chair that you put your foot on.
Yeah.
And a friend of mine who's become a musician in his later years, it was like, you don't see Jeff Beck with a little tiny stool under his foot. This is not the instrument for me. I need to move. Did you have that moment of, my heart belongs to a different kind of music?
Yes, I think that did happen. I think there were two things going on. I loved singing.
Right.
I always loved singing and was always in the school choir, that sort of stuff, at my junior school anyway. And so I think I equated the guitar with being able to learn songs, yeah.
Right.
And then performing them somehow. So, yeah, I wanted to get into a band and be singing and playing, which I did with moderate.
Oh, first band name. Come on, we have to go there.
No, I don't have one. It's even worse.
What? Go on.
No, none of us could think of one. There are five of us in the band. We couldn't think of one.
Couldn't think of a name.
No, so we called ourselves the No Names.
Oh, that's terrible.
And it's worse than terrible. It's the worst, it's the worst non-band name ever invented. With two capital N's, you know, No Names.
Oh, yeah.
The No Names.
Yeah. For the merchandising that was going to follow.
Yeah, terrible. It was. Honestly. Yeah, probably they'd have been, you know, lightning bolts, you know, N's.
What kind of stuff did you play? Did the No Names play?
Well, not a long way from Blondie, actually. I got into the Cars. Really like them. Early 80s. We covered a Cars tune. We were doing bits of everything. We had a bit of... We did a bit of Bob Dylan, weirdly, because we were sort of set up in a slightly different way. But our lead guitarist loved Dylan.
Right.
And then I think we split up to pursue solo careers at the age of... At the age of 16.
Musical differences.
That was kind of it. And then by that point, I was just strumming away on steel strings. And that's why I went off busking, which I loved doing. And I just went busking for a few years, you know, my early 20s, while I was training as an actor and before I sort of got going as an actor. And I loved doing it. I just loved standing in the street, sticking your cap down and just shouting at people as they went by and just bashing out songs.
It's a good way of getting your chops up, isn't it? It's a good way of getting good.
I mean, I knew 60 songs, so I could go to a big sort of old library in my head of, again, all just classics. There was nothing obscure. It was, you know, there's Bowie and Beatles and Elvis and Stones and, you know, and Lenny Kravitz and, you know, whoever, was throw them all in, you know. But I just loved it. The problem with it is I'm not as good a guitarist as I should be because I got stuck into just allowing the guitar to accompany me singing rather than doing a deep dive on guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish I had. I wish I had more. More.
You mentioned Bowie a couple of times. Is there a Bowie... Of the many eras, of the many worlds of Bowie that kind of first really hit you, did you go in at Ziggy? Did you go in at...
No,
Ashes
do you know
Ashes?
What? I was in early. I was in early with Hunky Dory.
All right. Great
and
start.
I'm a huge Bowie fan for everything he did or attempted to do. Not all of it worked, but he was tirelessly, restlessly creative, and I think he was brilliant. Some of his lyrics, like, really? Dave, really, you don't know what they mean, you know, so how can we possibly stand a chance? But yeah, and actually dangerously close to that is a song I used to play busking, which is Quicksand, and I always loved Quicksand. Melancholy tune about maybe our existence, death, etc. I was just sort of drawn to it. I thought it's a beautiful song. Bowie's complicated with his, you know, he changes chord a lot. You know, there are lots of different chord changes and they're sometimes quite complex. It's not just rock and roll chords.
Mm.
So I always enjoyed playing him. I never had a 12 string. He was always on his 12 string. But yeah, Quicksand was always a favourite.
I'm closer to the golden dawn, immersed in Crowley's uniform of imagery. I'm living in a silent film, portraying Himmler's sacred realm of dream reality. I'm frightened by the total goal, drawing to the ragged hole, and I ain't got the power anymore. No, I ain't got the power anymore. I'm the twisted name on Garbo's eyes, living proof of Churchill's lies. I'm destiny. I'm torn between the light and dark, where others see their target, divine symmetry. Sad.
of my thoughts, and I ain't got the power more. Don't believe in yourself. Don't deceive. Just a mortal with potential of a superman. I'm living on. I tethered to the logic of Homo sapiens. Can't take my eyes from the great salvation of bullshit faith.
That was, of course, David Bowie and Quicksand from Hunky Dory, one of the musical choices of my guest here on The First Time, actor and musician Damien Lewis. And we'll hear more from Damien after this.
BBC Radio 6. 6 Music.
6 Music's Artist Collection, where we anthologise an artist. This time, we're celebrating one of the biggest rock bands of the 90s. Oasis. Showcasing their best live performances. Iconic interviews.
McGee came walking up to me and he said, what are your band calling? And I said, Oasis. He said, do you want a record deal? So he said, yeah, why not?
Plus, curated playlists and highlights from the BBC archives. 6 Music's Artist Collection, Oasis. Listen now on BBC Sounds.
6 Music.
This is going to be going back a little bit, but what was the first concert you went to, the first gig you went to that really... Actually, the first one just you went to flat out, and then the first one that kind of really made an impact.
Oh... Well, first one, flat out, and I didn't feel like I was allowed to be there. I was 17. I felt young to be at a big concert. I don't know why. It just felt, it was at Wembley, it was Queen, and they were supported by INXS.
You see, right, we have a problem here already because we're of a similar kind of age, and my mum didn't let me go to that gig. My friend got tickets at school
right,
for me and him.
Right.
And my mum, fearing, understandably... the scale of it, the fact it was in London, which was 130 miles away, and my mum is the most amazing person, clearly, in the world. I'm not throwing shade at the mum, never.
But, mum,
but
this one
but
decision...
Mum, mum, it was Queen of Wembley, mum.
Oh, I think it was 86?
Yeah, 85, 86, something like that. Oh, and you went that gig. I hate
and it was you. Definitely after... So they had the big resurgence, didn't they, with Live Aid?
Yeah.
Suddenly everyone loved Queen again.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Because they were amazing. So I think it was 86 or 87. It was a friend of mine who just seemed like his dad or him. They just had access to shit that other people didn't. It was like one of those friends.
One of those, yeah.
I was like, how'd you get all these tickets to the Wembley Queen gig? But I discovered In Excess that day and didn't come away thinking, love them. But then I think round about the same time or very soon after, they released Kick.
Yeah, that's the one.
And Kick's a good album.
It's a big one, yeah.
You know?
Need You Tonight.
Big 80s, yeah. So it was a good day.
What
good
do you remember day. From the show? Can you remember much about it?
Well, I remember... It's Freddie. it's a lot of smoke. There's always dry ice in a Queen show.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, it's theatrical. And just Freddie prancing and the way he holds, you know, the elongated mic stand.
Yep.
And sort of pole dances on it.
What about a gig you went to of something of your kind of generation, something of your age or genre, when you're like, this is my band? Queen are kind of for everyone. They're brilliant.
Yeah.
But like, this is my thing now.
Oh, it's a good question. It's really good. these are good questions. I'm going to say J.J. Cale.
Okay.
I'm going to say J.J. Cale in Hammersmith. And I discovered J.J. Cale late teens, probably, and just went very quietly about my business listening to him. No one really knew who he was. He'd written a couple of songs that other people had turned into huge hits. And I just couldn't believe that anyone could be that laid back.
It is some of the most laid back music that anybody's ever written.
Just... It, as cool a compliment. Shuffle blues. The album Naturally is one of my all-time favourites. And then I got to see him much, much later when he came, you know, much later, like 20 years later, when he came into town at Hammersmith. And I sat and I watched him and I just thought, you're not going to break a sweat here, are you? I can tell. But I'm in. You've got me, I'm in.
What song should we play?
I like They Call Me the Breeze. I mean, it's like an old sort of... I think he even says it on the record, like it's an old rock and roll favourite.
Here's one of your old rock and roll favourites, friend. Shuffle on down the Broadway.
That was the great J.J. Cale and Call Me the Breeze, the very first track on Naturally, his classic debut album from 1971. And if hugely geeky music facts are your thing, you might like to know that that song features one of the first ever instances of a drum machine on an album, rather than a live drum kit, just before Sly Stone used one on Family Affair. It was an Ace Tone FR1 Rhythm Ace. If you needed that information, you probably don't. Anyway, I digress. That song is the choice of my guest on this episode of The First Time, actor and musician Damien Lewis. We'll be talking about Damien's debut album, Mission Creep, shortly, as well as discussing playing live in Hollywood and his love of Radiohead, all coming up after the Six Music News.
Six Music. This is BBC Radio. Six Music.
BBC News at 9:30. I'm Mike Powell. A by-election will be held in Rutherglen and Hamilton West after voters in the constituency approved the removal of Margaret Ferrier. The former SNP MP was convicted of breaking COVID lockdown rules and had already been suspended by her party. Ms Ferrier says she respects the outcome of the recall petition, which is the first ever to be held in Scotland. England's footballers have advanced to the knockout stages of the Women's World Cup after beating China 6-1. The European champions end the group stage with a perfect record. Linda Hale, who played for England in the 70s, says the team has come a long way.
From when I first started playing, we had next to nothing. And now, what the England team have got now, they're absolutely elite players. But actually working up from when I first started playing, with all the money from and the grants from the lotteries and other things, they've brought it up. And there's no end to what we can do. It's an absolutely brilliant time for women's football.
Poland says it's sending additional military forces to its border with Belarus after two helicopters violated its airspace. Minsk has denied its aircraft crossed the border. Tensions have been rising since Wagner mercenaries moved to Belarus after their mutiny in Russia. House prices have fallen at their fastest annual rate in 14 years, with experts predicting further drops in the coming months. The Nationwide Building Society said prices fell by 3.8% in the year to July. The first of three planes sent to evacuate European citizens from Niger following last week's military coup has left the capital Niamey. France organised the flights after demonstrators attacked its embassy on Sunday. Leonardo Santos Simeo from the UN said the ECOWAS bloc of West African nations would be within its right to intervene if the situation didn't improve.
What we value and we support is that all means to find a peaceful solution for the problem should be used. But recognize also that ECOWAS has the right to take other measures if they feel fit.
Orkney has become the first place in the UK to have post delivered by drone. Letters and parcels are being flown to Royal Mail staff on the islands of Gramsey and Hoy as part of a three-month trial. Chris Paxton is in charge of the project.
I mean, I've worked for Royal Mail for 20 years and I have to say this is the most exciting thing I've ever been involved in. And having a chance to try new technology and hopefully introduce something that will become more commonplace in the future. But yeah, it's really sort of cutting edge stuff and it's really exciting to be involved in it.
NASA has received a signal from a distant spacecraft it lost contact with after scientists sent the wrong command by mistake. The signal appeared after a regular scan of the sky confirming Voyager 2 was still broadcasting and in good health. NASA will now try to send instructions to turn the probe's antenna back towards Earth. That's Six Music News for tonight. Good night.
BBC Radio Six Music.
To me. so cut up, but you look so pretty.
I'm Matt Everett, and welcome back to the first time here on BBC Six Music and BBC Sounds. We just played Down on the Bowery, the debut single, the first single, and the opening track from the first ever album from my guest on this episode, actor and now musician, Damian Lewis. So obviously that step from acting on stage to playing music on stage is an interesting one. I asked Damian about how he felt when he first made the decision to put himself out there as a singer.
You know, with each week that passes, I feel less of an imposter syndrome. And the more I gig with the band, the more I feel I have a right to be there. And the single is sort of added to that. But it's quite nerve-wracking the moment it goes out, definitely. But then it sort of happens separately from you because it's all happening digitally.
Yep.
Online, on a DSP, then it's just sort of happening without you. And I was speaking to someone else about this, an artist, and he's saying, yeah, that is what happens. Then it's just off.
It's everywhere.
Yeah. And nothing changes immediately because people have got to find it. Still, people presumably have no idea this is what I'm doing. So people find it, and then you maybe clock back in on your DSP or whatever it is, see, oh, the numbers went up a bit. That's good, you know. That's great. My gran's now listening to it. That's good. We've added one. But it just sort of, I feel a bit like I'm now following it.
Right.
Like everyone else, hopefully, will start following it. In 2001, there was a very young new band that everyone was talking about called Coldplay. I was in LA. Somebody got me a ticket. I said, I don't know much about them. And we went down, to the Mayan downtown. And they effectively just played Parachutes. That's
all they had at the time, yeah.
Right? And Chris Martin makes a joke at the end of the hour and says, my dad keeps telling to me, Chris, why don't you play more? They want to hear more. And he says, Dad, you've heard it. That's it. That's all we've written. And now we have to get off stage. And then I think they did one cover of a Beatles song and got off. And I thought it was charming and honest. And I feel a bit like that. I've written one album's worth of songs. We have a couple of covers, which are fun, which we throw in, which aren't on the album, just to, you know, juice it up a bit and, you know, get everyone moving. But otherwise, that's it. So I still feel very young, very new to it. But I'm excited by the time, and I just start to feel it a little bit already, when you can just see a few people nodding in the audience, like, I know this song.
Yeah.
And I've only put out two songs, so they've only got two songs to choose from. But it's nice, because that is a sort of validation that people are listening to your music. That when you play live, think, oh, they know the song, they've listened to it.
Is your head thinking about, this was a good experience, this record, there's probably another one to be made? Do you think like that?
I've definitely got another one.
Good.
Will I still have a record label? These are the big questions. Let's see how this one goes. It's quite an interesting moment, isn't it? Your second album, you could be giving a second album to your adoring public, or you could be inflicting another album on a reluctant public. Who knows what it's going to be like, but I think I'll do it anyway.
Yeah, that should make a difference.
Because it's fun.
Six Music.
There's a spiritual energy in heavy bass frequencies every Friday this summer from morning until night.
We are raving.
Six Music's Rave Forever.
You can live only wrong without you. Come on.
By the noughties, dance music is on main stages across the world.
Put on our classics and we'll have a little dance, shall we?
This Friday, expect all the songs you love and new discoveries from this decade.
Six Music's Rave Forever, all day this Friday.
And listen anywhere on the BBC Sounds app.
Six. Radiohead, who we actually, before this interview started, we were talking about anyway, just because we both love them.
Yeah.
When did you first fall for Radiohead?
It was the Bends. It was just, you know, it was just that moment. What was that, 95?
95, 96, yeah.
Yeah.
Like
and I just heard, so right in the middle of Britpop. But they didn't sound Britpop-y. They sounded like a rock band, but they didn't sound like a rock band. I just was hooked. And Tom's lyrics were sort of questing lyrics of curiosity about anything that he particularly wanted to talk about. And I loved that. And I think there's one song, Creep, I think, has become their huge number. And I think he slightly resents that because it sort of pigeonholes him at a time when he wrote it. And he just said, I don't feel like that, you know. But that's the risk of writing a song in the moment, isn't it? It is a bit like a diary entry, can be. Out of that whole period, there was a sort of resurgence of guitar bands, I suppose, and then into the noughties, those garage bands sort of hit again, like the Strokes, the White Stripes, and, you know, the Kills, you know, that sort of stuff all came in those early noughties. But Radiohead have just remained Radiohead, just totally distinctive.
I love the older and weirder and stranger and more messed up I get, they kind of follow me, quite nice. This is like, I'm not the same person I was 20 years ago, but neither are you, and you're making music that feels right for me now.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
What's the Radiohead song we should play?
Let's do Fake Plastic Trees, because it's a cracker.
The green plastic watering can for a fake Chinese rubber plant and a fake plastic girl. She bought from a rubber man in a town full of rubber plants to get rid of itself. The world's around. The world's around. It wears me out. it wears me out. And if I could be who you wanted, if I could be who you wanted all the time, all the time.
Was there a moment when, like, the guitar got put down? It was like, you know, I've got other things to do now. This acting thing seems to be going reasonably well, so I'm gonna put it down. Has it been kind of there always, or did it get parked?
I think it got pushed out. I think that's what happened. There were always guitars in the house. There was always a guitar to pick up and play and strum and play slightly drunkenly the Proclaimers of a Saturday evening when everyone just sat around and he's going, play 500 miles. Okay.
Always. I do not need asking twice in that scenario.
Do you know what I mean? So, yes, it was always there. And I was always, if I could, I was always trying to put together rap party bands on shows.
Okay.
So,
who have you tried to hoodwink into your groups then? Well,
I did a show called Life over in LA. A lot of the American crews play instruments and they're good. So Homeland in particular.
Was there a Homeland band? That would be brilliant.
There was a Homeland band, which and we played the rap party. Yeah.
Amazing.
And we did a bit of Neil Young, bit of Lou Reed.
Great.
And then I did something similar in a bar in Culver City in LA called Ford's Filling Station, which was Harrison Ford's son's restaurant.
Right.
And we played a gig there and we played Sweet Jane and a bit of Primal Scream and classic, you know, just sort of
barroom rock and roll.
Barroom rock and roll, rap band. Brilliant. Music. I think I might even have... No, I can't say that. according to Steve, my manager, there's a right side of rock and roll and there's a wrong side of rock and roll. I'm trying very hard to stay the right side of rock and roll. I've already mentioned the Proclaimers. I love you, the Proclaimers, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
I actually really do. I really do.
I love that idea of like some sort of director of photography going, Damien's coming, he's got a guitar, run, quick. Run, he's trying to put a band together.
I know.
Guys, come back. You can do the show here.
I know.
I love it.
The band on this show, Life, I was on, it was NBC Universal, I was living in LA for 2 years, and we would, between the big sound stages at Universal Studios, it's called The Breezeway.
Right.
The bit that goes between where you can, you know, park up your vehicles and load everything in. And we used to sit there and rehearse just with an acoustic and just play some songs. So we called ourselves The Breezeways, which I actually think was quite a good...
It could be worse.
And quite sort of retro, sort of
60s... Yeah, it could be worse.
Name. Better than the No Names, anyway.
Much better.
The No Names. Oh, dear. anyway, we called The Breezeways and we played a gig down at Ford's Filling Station, which I don't think is there anymore. So that's how I kept it going.
And it's still there. That desire to perform was always there, even if it was just bubbling up at these opportunities.
Yeah, I just think it's probably a bit intimidated by it. You know, it's really, it's, you know, I wanted to be, and maybe critically wanted to be perceived as a serious actor, I suppose. Be thought of as good at it. I think, you know, be an actor's actor. You know, the person that your peer group think is good. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
That sort of thing. So I think I thought I just had to concentrate on that and do that well, and suffered a little bit from that British thing of, well, you can't be doing two things at once. I remember Leslie Phillips saying that to me once. Yeah, there's a name to conjure with.
Certainly is.
Leslie Phillips saying, Damien, don't try and do too many things. They don't like it. They don't understand. And Leslie was lovely, actually, really genuinely trying to give me a piece of advice. It was really nice at the time to say it. But I spent a lot of my time working in America, and they don't have the same problem over there.
Yeah.
So probably takes a global event, like a global pandemic, to shut everyone in their houses for 6 months mm-hmm. for you to sit and just have a little think about everything, slow down. And I came out of that and I just thought, why not? Life's too short. I enjoy it. I'm going to have a go. And here I am on your on your radio show.
With your first record deal?
With a record deal, which was surprising but lovely, with Decca, which I'm very grateful to them for. I hope I can repay them for their trust. Just played Cheltenham Jazz Festival. I mean, not in my wildest dreams did I think I'd be playing Cheltenham Jazz Festival with my incredible band. Sorry, I'm not turning this into an advert, I promise. But I just feel very lucky. I think I'd be lying if I said to you just enjoying it is enough, but it's almost enough just to be enjoying it, having a good time. Of course I'd like people to like it.
Mm-hmm.
Of course I would. It would be a much happier adventure if people say, that's quite good, rather than, oh God, everyone look away. But I am really enjoying it. Just making music with brilliant, brilliant musicians is, what a gift.
And the final song. What should we go out on? What should we finish the show on? This can be anything you want.
You set me some homework.
Yeah.
I came in with Led Zepp.
Yep.
When I got on my motorbike as a 21-year-old, I went busking around Europe.
Mm.
You know, Led Zepp 4 and, well, 2, 3, those first four albums, basically, that was in my ears with my big brick Walkman because it was 1991, 92. I'm going to let you choose between When the Levee Breaks, which I just love,
mm-hmm.
and Ramble On, which mm-hmm. I also love, until Robert Plant starts talking about Mordor in the middle of it.
Yeah.
Which is a, Robert, sorry, it's a misstep. What's going on with the Mordor?
It was the 70s. He's the only man that's allowed to sing about Lord of the Rings because he does it so well.
So he's read his Tolkien.
Exactly.
So, okay.
It's fine.
So it's good. So it's a literary reference, so it's great. So
exactly.
We forgive him.
Exactly.
And Robert, if you ever listen to Matt's show, I'm number one super fan anyway. And then Elvis, because Elvis, I thought I was Elvis until I was about 17. And I did everything to try to be Elvis. I would probably say, can we just go out on Mystery Train?
Oh, yeah.
That's probably what I would say.
Okay. Well, let's finish on that song.
Okay.
It's been really good to speak to you. Thank you.
Cheers, mate. Thank you.
Well, that long black train got my baby and gone. Train, train, coming round, round the bend. Train, train, coming round the bend. It never will again, no, not again. Train, train, coming down, down the line. Train, train, coming down the line. Well, it's bringing my baby, cause she's my own. My, she's mine, all mine. Train, train, coming round, round the bend. Train coming round, round the bend. it to my baby, but it never will again, never will again.
That is the still incredible Mystery Train by Elvis. The final choice of my guest on the first time today, actor and musician Damien Lewis, whose debut album Mission Creep is out now on Decca. You can head to the BBC Sounds app to hear archived first time interviews from Tom York, Liam Gallagher, Sir Elton John, and my last guest, Feist. So Mystery Train was, yes, the final choice of Damien Lewis, my guest, but he did also mention Ramble On, and I think we have just about enough time to fit in some Led Zeppelin and a thunderous groove of John Bonham. I'm back tomorrow with another first time as I welcome Jenny Lewis to the show. But until then, I've been Matt Everett. Thanks for listening.
But Gollum had the evil one.